Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Czech police suspect a married couple of being Russian agents involved in the 2014 Vrbětice bombing. Poland could construct another floating storage and regasification unit amid Czech and Slovak interest for liquefied natural gas. And a second tent town for Ukrainian refugees is being constructed in Prague. Czech police suspect a married couple of espionage due to their connection with Russian intelligence agents who carried out a deadly operation on Czech territory in 2014, Radiožurnál and Respekt reported on Monday. The news outlet said that detectives believe that Nikolai Shaposhnikov, an ex-Russian soldier with a Czech passport, and his wife Elena wrote emails about sensitive arms deals to GRU Major General Andrei Avayanov, whose unit is suspected of blowing up arms stores in Vrbětice 8 years ago, killing 2 people and causing major material damage. Shaposhnikov also met Avayanov in Portugal, according to the former's daughter, who a reporter spoke to in North Moravia. Poland could construct a second floating storage and regasification unit aside from the one already being planned in the port city of Gdansk. The option is being considered due to high interest in purchasing liquefied natural gas from the Czech Republic and Slovakia, the Czech news agency reported on Monday, citing Poland's environment minister Anna Moskwa. Both countries are currently looking to cut their dependency on Russian gas and are therefore exploring alternate delivery methods. Poland is already planning the construction of a floating storage and regasification unit in Gdańsk, which should be finished by 2026 and have a capacity of transforming 6 billion cubic meters of gas a year. Prague firefighters began constructing a tent town for Ukrainian refugees in the capital's Malešice district with a capacity of 150 beds on Monday. The improvised settlement will include an eatery and showers and is mainly intended for those refugees who have recently found themselves stranded at Prague's main train station. It is the second tent town to spring up in Prague in recent weeks, following the construction of a similar facility in the capital's Troja neighbourhood in mid-May. Prague has been struggling with insufficient accommodation capacity for a large influx of refugees for some months. The Czech capital also hosted a 2-day meeting of the directors of NATO member states' military intelligence agencies last week. This is according to the spokesman of the Czech Military Intelligence Service, Jan Pejšek. He told this to the Czech news agency on Monday. The meeting was held as part of discussions within NATO's Military Intelligence Committee, and Mr. Pejšek said that 6 partner states also joined in the meeting, with a Ukrainian representative speaking via video call. The Czech Republic is currently chairing the NATO Military Intelligence Committee. Also, the Czech Republic's main public health insurance company, VZP, expects that the influx of 350,000 Ukrainian refugees could raise this year's expenditures on care by around 6.9 billion crowns. Roughly 2/3 of this number will be covered by insurance premiums paid by the state or by employers. VZP representatives announced on Monday that close to 333,000 Ukrainians had thus far registered with the insurer, with a further 38,000 having registered with smaller insurance companies. Around 18% of Ukrainians who are in a productive age have already managed to find jobs in the Czech Republic since they arrived, according to VZP data. The insurance company's director Zdeněk Kabátek said that he expects insurance costs will probably decrease over time as more Ukrainians either find work in the Czech Republic or return to their home country. And when we come to booze, the number of people who drink alcohol either daily or every second day declined from 19.8% to 15.4% between the years 2020 to 2021. This according to a study conducted by the National Institute of Public Health. The institute informed on Monday that the average rate of pure alcohol consumption per person also decreased from 2020's 8 litres to 6.9 litres in 2021. This excludes abstainers. On average, 1 in 6 Czechs currently drink alcohol on a daily or semi-daily basis, according to the study, and 10.6% of men and 4.1% of women drink alcohol daily at harmful amounts. Around 1/4 of the population still smokes, but the study says that that number has been steadily decreasing since 2012. And finally, we come to the weather. Tuesday, we'll see temperatures range around 22 degrees Celsius with overcast skies and possible rainfall in the south of the country. My name is Tom McEncrow, and that is all the news for now.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Vraňková. Coming up in today's program, Czechs have taken bronze that feels like gold at the Ice Hockey World Championship. Bohumil Kubišta's painting Old Prague Motif has set a new Czech auction record. And Brno scientists have digitized a deer river for better environmental protection. Later on, the Moravian-born Canadian linguist Julie Sedivi discusses losing her first language Czech and her efforts to get it back again. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Czech Republic came third at the Ice Hockey World Championship in Finland on Sunday. A storming comeback win over the United States gave the Czechs their first medal at a major tournament in 10 long years. Bronze that players say feels like gold. Ian Willoughby has the details.
Pastrňák je na levém kruhu, pálí a dává gól! Je vyrovnáno, tohle klaplo, Pastrňák z ničeho nic z vrcholu levého kruhu vypálil.
The Czech Republic were 3-2 down to the US at the end of the second period of Sunday's game for third place at the Ice Hockey World Championship in Tampere. But then the Czechs went into absolute overdrive. At the start of the third period, David Pastrňák scored two and captain Roman Červenka one goal within only 3 minutes to give them a 5-3 lead. By the end of the game, Pastrňák had bagged a hat-trick as he and his teammates secured a famous 8-4 victory. It was the Czech Republic's first medal at a major hockey tournament since way back in 2012, when they also took bronze, also in Finland. Czech forward David Krejčí was watching from the bench in the third period as his teammates almost lined up to find the net.
It was just an experience on the bench with one goal after the other. The third one, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth. There were two more later, but that didn't make much of a difference. Seeing the guys and the coach with smiles on their faces was simply a fantastic feeling.
Krejčí gave a lot of the credit for the turnaround to the Czech Republic's Finnish coach, Kari Jalonen, who in the final period put Pastrňák in the second line. Alongside the Boston Bruins superstar Tomáš Hertl, who had previously had an underwhelming tournament, suddenly sprang to life and notched up 3 assists.
First forward is from Team Czechia, number 10, Roman Červenka.
Captain Roman Červenka, who's 36, shone in Finland, topping the points table with 17 for the best world championship of his career. A horse Červenka told Czech radio how the turnaround had been achieved.
That's how we imagined it in the changing rooms after the second period. We said that we had to leave everything on the ice. We succeeded in scoring a goal quickly, which helped us a lot, and then we felt we were on top and we managed to see things through to the end.
Pastrňák spoke for many fans when he said the bronze medal at the World Championships had felt like winning the competition for the Czechs, and David Krejčí echoed that sentiment.
If we were always winning every year and coming home with a medal, then third place would be a little different. But in this case, it has been 10 years, so we're celebrating it like a gold medal.
Bohumil Kubišta's painting Old Prague Motif was sold on Sunday at auction for 123.6 million crowns, the most a painting has ever sold for at a Czech art auction. It was also almost 5 times the starting price of 25 million crowns, which itself would have been a record for a work by Kubišta. Anna Fodor looks at why this painting garnered so much attention.
The black and white oil painting Old Prague Motif depicts a cityscape that recognizably looks like Prague, but contains clear cubist elements. The painter, Bohumil Kubišta, remained relatively unknown and hardly sold any paintings during his lifetime. It was only after his death that he became famous, and his work started to sell for large sums. I asked Jan Stuhlík, editor-in-chief of the internet portal Art Plus, which provides information on the Czech art market to a Czech and international audience, why it was precisely this painting by this artist that broke the record.
Well, it's worth mentioning that Kubista created his outstanding painting in 1911, which was a crucial period in his career. Then he changed his style, being influenced very much by artworks of masters like Pablo Picasso or Georges Braque. And importantly, this was Kubista's first painting from this period that has ever appeared in Czech auctions. So it was a very rare piece of art. And overall, it's necessary to add that Kubista died very young, and he hadn't left behind many paintings. Until Sunday, only 14 artworks had appeared in Czech auctions. So this is why the momentum seen on Sunday auctions was so high and so hyped.
Kubista was from Vlčkovice in the Hradec Králové region. In his earlier works, he was heavily influenced by Edvard Munch and painted mostly in an expressionist style. But after the turning point that Stuhlík refers to, around 1910-11, he became much more influenced by the Cubist movement. However, he never got to fully realize his potential, as he died at the age of just 34 during the 1918 Spanish flu epidemic. The owner of Galeria Kodl, which held Sunday's auction, Martin Kodl, said in an interview with Art Plus that he was pleased that the painting which broke the record was the work of a genuinely Czech artist. The previous record holder was Divertimento II by František Kupka, which sold for 90.4 million crowns in 2020. Kupka, although a native of Opočno, spent most of his adult life in France, and Kodl says that for a long time he was listed in the catalogues as being French. Although this was the most a painting has ever sold for at a Czech auction, and it happened to be a Czech painting, this is not the highest price tag a painting by a Czech artist has ever conjured. Léger Le Saumon 2 by František Kupka sold for £7.5 million, which is around 219 million Czech crowns, in a London auction organised by Sotheby's in March 2021. When I ask Stuhlík about the identity of the winner of the painting, he tells me that it will remain in Czech ownership.
When I spoke yesterday with Martin Kodl, which is the owner of the auction house, Galeria Kodl, he was kind of secret, but he said that the four bidders that bid it in the final rounds of the auction were all very respected Czech collectors, and that Kubista's artworks will be in good hands with the winner of the auction.
A team of scientists from the Global Change Research Institute in Brno has created a digital map of the Deer River Basin. With the help of the digitized model, they can simulate changes to the basin triggered by nature and human activity, helping to avoid flash floods and ineffective projects. Daniela Lazarová reports.
The South Moravian stretch of the Deer River and its surroundings has been converted into tables, graphs and pictures showing the river's high and low points during drought or torrential rain. With the help of the digitized model, scientists can predict with great accuracy how the river and surrounding environment would be affected by weeks of torrential rain, the construction of new dams or the return of the riverbed to its original meandering flow, one of the measures currently being considered to fight drought. Thanks to the digital model, water managers, foresters and farmers will be able to foresee problems and avoid costly mistakes or ineffective measures in the future. By clicking on individual points on the map, scientists can see the water level at a certain time of year, the profile of the riverbed, or the saturation of the surrounding soil. Scientist Milan Fischer explains the advantages of the virtual model.
Here we can test various measures without actually implementing them. It's much cheaper, and we can test a vast number of different combinations without causing necessary environmental damage. That was the main idea, creating a digital model to test adaptation measures, to see if the measures work synergistically or against each other.
Thanks to the digitized model, scientists can predict whether the construction of a new dam will dry up other rivers in the vicinity. They can tell how much water should ideally be released from a given dam in certain conditions and how that will impact the outflow into side rivers and the surrounding landscape. The model's co-author, Jana Bernsteinová, explains the different color codes.
The individual colors depict the character of the surrounding environment. Orange represents agricultural land and pink forest land. And here we can see the inner city of Brno at the confluence of the Svratka and Svitava rivers, marked in blue.
She says it makes a difference whether there is coniferous forest, deciduous forest, or bare land near rivers. If there is bare soil, it will tend to hold a lot of water, and in the event of torrential rain, there is a danger of flash floods in the area. The team is hoping that in future, the digital model of the river basin will not only help to prevent flash floods and improve environmental protection, but also to better coordinate individual measures taken in forestry, agriculture and water management.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. Everybody knows that Czech is a difficult language for foreigners to master, but what is it like trying to relearn the language if you have lost it as a child? That is something Ian Willoughby discusses with linguist Julie Sedivi in this edition of One on One.
In the recently published Memory Speaks, the linguist Julie Sedivi explores the deep connections between language, memory, identity and migration. As well as drawing on the science, the book is also something of a memoir. Sedivi's own family left Czechoslovakia when she was only two, and when they settled in Canada, she gradually lost most of her Czech. However, as a heritage language learner, she has managed to reconnect with her mother tongue in recent years. She spoke to me last week from her home in Calgary.
My father was, I guess, what you would call a forest caretaker or a forest ranger. We lived in a small house at the edge of a national forest, I guess, or a state forest. And we left in 1969, so after the invasion. And that departure was motivated, as for a number of Czechs who went abroad at that time, by the political circumstances of the time. My father had been deemed unfit for university because of political affiliations and religious affiliations. So they were looking for the possibility of educating their children was a very strong motivation for them. My father and mother both had been denied the opportunity to be educated at higher levels, and they wanted that opportunity for their kids, and they wanted to live with greater freedoms as well.
Well, naturally, initially, you spoke Czech together. How did Czech come to gradually become the kind of secondary language in your household after you settled in Montreal in Canada?
Really, the transition came at school. I think that's such a big boundary for many immigrant children. You grow up speaking the family language at home, but then all of a sudden, when much of your life takes place outside of the home, you very quickly realize that the world out there doesn't speak Czech. We did not have access to a large Czech-speaking community. Every now and then we might encounter a Czech speaker outside of our family, but it was very rare. And children pick up on these messages very quickly. They're very good at learning, out here in the world, these are the languages that are spoken. For me at that time, because we moved to Montreal, it was French and then English when we started school. So as we started speaking school at English and realized that there was really not much reward for speaking Czech, and in fact that other children might look at us a little bit strangely if we were heard speaking amongst ourselves in the schoolyard in Czech, we began to avoid speaking Czech in public and then brought that language home. So I recall that by the time my younger sister was born, 5 years younger than me, at that point I was in kindergarten, I guess, we were beginning to speak to our younger siblings in English at home.
In Memory Speaks, you say that the depth of loss of a first language is connected to age of immigration. You have a number of siblings. How did their experience of language in childhood compare to yours?
This is absolutely true. So the younger you are when you move from one language to another, the more likely you are to lose whatever language you had, which was certainly the case for all of us to some extent. And for the most part, we've seen that progression. We were six children. My oldest brother has retained an impressive degree of Czech. It easily gets activated when we make a trip back. And I think his grammar is quite solid. As we move down the ranks into the younger siblings, they're much less proficient, with the exception of my very youngest brother, who actually now divides his time between the Czech Republic and the United States. And his Czech to my ear is absolutely perfect. So he's been able to, I think, relearn it at a very high level of proficiency.
One thing you write in the book that's quite amusing is that you were at a loss in the schoolyard when you were asked for Czech swear words because you weren't hearing them at home.
Yeah, and this is something that happens, I think, to immigrant children, is that the contexts in which they hear their language spoken are very limited. So whatever you don't hear in your family, you don't necessarily learn as part of the language. In our case, my parents simply did not swear in Czech. And so when we were asked by our school friends to provide some examples of swear words, we couldn't do it, which is very embarrassing as a child when you claim to speak a particular language and you can't produce a swear word in that language. Other children quickly lose interest in you.
But you said your sister improvised.
My sister, who is very inventive, decided to tell the other kids that the filthiest word you could produce in Czech was the word zmrzlina, which satisfied them.
Which is, of course, ice cream. That is a really very funny story. One striking point in the book is when you say that parents often move country, go abroad or emigrate for the sake of their children. But in doing so, in a sense, they lose their children or they lose a certain connection to their children. Could you elaborate on that?
One of the, I guess, tragedies of language learning is that for biological reasons that we don't fully understand, it's not generally possible to learn a second language to full native-like proficiency if you begin learning it in adulthood. And on the other hand, as we've mentioned, children who move into a new linguistic environment are particularly vulnerable to losing their first language. So you have this collision of biological predispositions within immigrant families who arrive with young children. And what this typically means is that the children don't have the ability to remain fully proficient in their parents' language throughout their lives, often even as early as middle childhood and adolescence, during those critical years when communication between parents and children is difficult under any circumstances, and when there's a language barrier that becomes all the more so.
And was it a source of sadness to your parents?
I think it certainly was. I remember feeling, particularly on my father's side, that sense of distance and sadness. My mother was able to learn English to a somewhat higher degree of proficiency than he did throughout his life. I was aware of that sadness and that feeling that he had continually, that we were drifting away from him, drifting away from the culture that he felt very attached to. So yeah, this was, I think, something that dominated our childhood and adolescence.
I know some bilingual people who really aren't perfect in any language. So I guess there really can be disadvantages to being bilingual.
Yes, absolutely. Depending on your pattern of when you acquired which language at which time and where you moved around in your life. I know a number of people like this as well. And they're faced with, you know, the challenge that they don't have a single language that they feel as much at ease in as many people who command a language thoroughly.
I knew somebody who was trilingual, who spoke Czech, German, and an African language. And this person told me they didn't like the version of themselves when they spoke Czech, because Czech had so many diminutives and so on. A lot of times in Czech, if you want to ask for something, you have to do it in a roundabout way. And the person didn't like that iteration of themselves.
This is such a common thing among multilingual and multicultural people, is this feeling that they have different versions of themselves in different languages. And of course, that, I think, reflects the fact that those languages have been learned in different cultural contexts. There are different social expectations of you in each of those languages and cultures. And you might feel like there's a better fit with one or the other. I myself feel that way as well. I speak English, French, and Czech. And I do feel that different aspects of my personality come out in those different languages. In Czech, I feel I have permission to be more blunt than I do in English, particularly when I'm speaking with people who are closer to me. English Canadians have a reputation for requiring a certain degree of politeness, and I think that that stereotype is very true. And in French, I feel just a little bit more free, more carefree, and that's my fun language, the language in which I just relax and enjoy myself.
Tell us about your first visit to the Czech Republic as an adult from the perspective of language.
My very first visit was in 1994. I was there as a young student, a young graduate student. That was my first experience of being immersed in a Czech-speaking environment where everything occurred in Czech. And I recall pulling into the train station in Prague and hearing over the loudspeaker the announcements about where trains would be leaving from which platforms and so on. That just struck me as such a strange thing to hear. I had never heard Czech spoken in a public place like that before. So to me, it really felt like one of my brothers or uncles had run up to the microphone and grabbed as a prank and begun speaking our little family language as a joke. And it was really a profound experience to just feel the reality of there being an entire nation who spoke this particular language that to me had been a very small, intimate language.
Tell us about your own efforts to improve your Czech later in life.
The real turning point for me was a trip I took in 2015, I believe, when I was able to travel to the Czech Republic by myself, so without reinforcements of people who could easily translate for me, and spent some sustained period of time in my father's village of Moravská Nová Ves, where very few people spoke English, including most of my family members. So I was really thrown into that environment. And I had the experience of the language simply bubbling up in my mind. I would begin to dream in Czech, and words that I hadn't used in decades would suddenly come to mind in unexpected ways. That did real wonders for my confidence and my ability to speak Czech. And since then, I've tried to retain it as much as I can. I read as much as I can in Czech. I stream programs and podcasts in Czech as a way of at least retaining my comprehension. But I really feel the effects of not having Czech speakers around with whom I can produce the language. So it is very high time for me to make another trip back.
You make an interesting point in the book also that many Czechs see others or foreigners as either perfect speakers of Czech or non-speakers of Czech.
Yeah, I think it's still the case that relatively few people learn Czech as adults. And you really have to have a very specific reason for learning Czech. And as a result, I think many Czech speakers aren't used to encountering adult learners of Czech the way that English learner speakers, for example, are. We are used to hearing all kinds of different accents and to glossing over some of the grammatical errors and oddities that people make. But I think that's less the case in Czech. So, you know, I felt that there was not always a full comprehension of what it's like to be an adult learner or to be a heritage language learner of Czech. And I would encounter, for example, comments that when I made a grammatical error, someone might say, well, I told you how to say this last week. How can you not remember? And for those of us, of course, who have tried to learn a foreign language, we know that it takes a massive number of repetitions before you finally master a certain grammatical structure. For me as a heritage language learner, I think it has a lot of emotional impact because on the one hand, you feel that this is your language. This is the language you heard as a child that your mother spoke to you. You feel a very strong emotional connection to it, a sense of ownership. But then you're also very aware of your outsider status, that you don't master it proficiently, that people look at you and sometimes, at times, laugh at you for your lack of command of the language. So it's a very conflicted feeling for me.
Julie, what are your favorite things about the Czech language?
So many things. I really appreciate the orientation that many Czechs have to their language as a thing of beauty. I think many Czechs really value linguistic skills, value the ability to tell a good story, a descriptive story. I love its expressiveness, the way that you can add prefixes to verbs to bring out nuances of meaning that you can't in English. For example, in Czech, you can capture the difference between reading. You would use the word číst. But if you wanted to capture the way that you are fully absorbed in reading, you would say se začíst. That would be like to immerse yourself in reading. So Czech grammar has the capacity to add these kinds of nuances to verbs that I think are really, really lovely and very powerful. There's so much to love about the Czech, the sounds of it, the way the consonants just jumble together in, you know, great configurations. I'm clearly very attached to this language.
That edition of One on One with linguist Julie Sedivi, which was first broadcast in February, brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague International. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franíková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.